Welcome to the Nightly Five podcast with Ben O'Shea.
On today's show, Israel has retaliated to Iran's missile attack on the weekend. An expert in Middle East politics will tell us what that means for the region. Plus, a teenage boy in Queensland has been tragically killed by a crocodile. More details on that soon. Aldi has had a crack at liquor laws in Queensland that it says are costing consumers. And there's a big weekend of sport on the way, including a couple of famous coaches taking on their old clubs. And you better believe we'll be unpacking the new Taylor Swift album. Let's get into it. In our top story today, Israeli missiles have hit Iran.
Israel has retaliated against Iran, and we are learning from a senior U.S. official. Israeli missiles have hit a site in Iran. There have been explosions heard in Iraq and Syria. At this hour, it is not clear the cause of those explosions. All of this comes just days after Iran fired hundreds of ballistic missiles into Israel.
Yes, US officials have confirmed today that Israeli missiles have hit a site in Iran. It follows the news over the weekend that Iran had launched hundreds of drones and missiles, which was itself a retaliatory strike after a suspected Israel strike on its embassy compound in Syria. Here to help us understand where this conflict goes next is global futurist and foreign affairs expert Dr. Keith Suter. Dr. Suter, thanks for joining us on the Nightly Five.
Yes, good afternoon.
And so what does this latest strike by Israel mean for the region?
Well, it means that we're getting a ramping up, which is exactly the opposite of what the United States and its allies had hoped to avoid. In other words, that the Americans have said to the Israelis, look, you have demonstrated to Iran that you can shoot down the Iranian missiles. Why don't you just call it quits at this point? And we've had a delay on the part of Israel, so there must have been quite a bit of discussion within the Israeli cabinet as to whether they should respond again. It looked as though the Israelis at one point were going to just simply accept that, you know, they've reached a position where of stability. But instead, we've now got a few days late, this attack by Israel on Iran. We're not quite sure exactly what has happened. The Americans are saying that it's an Israeli missile. The Iranian officials are saying they've been able to destroy three drones. The target was Isfahan, which is the traditional capital of Iran. It's to the south of the capital at the moment, which is Tehran. And it's the site of the major nuclear developments on the part of Iran. So it's a very military, very significant location. The Israelis obviously didn't aim, well, we assume they didn't aim for the nuclear facilities, but they clearly wanted to send a message to Iran. Now, just before the attack, the Iranian official in New York at the UN had said that in the event of there being a retaliation by Israel, Iran will itself now retaliate against Israel. So the worry that we've now got is that the Iranians will be under pressure to launch another attack on Israel. Now, that may come from Iran itself or perhaps from Hezbollah to the north of Israel, based in Lebanon, where they've got hundreds of missiles that they can fire into Israel. So we may be seeing a ramping up of what is now becoming a regional conflict. It began originally between Israel and Gaza. It's now becoming a regional conflict, which is exactly what countries like Australia, the US and UK hope to avoid.
Yeah, well, based on what we've seen overnight with this latest Israeli strike and the previous strikes in the Iranian embassy in Syria and, of course, Iran's retaliation to that, how close are we now to a full-scale conflict between the two countries, and what would that look like for the region if it happened?
Well, it'll be a disaster for the region if it really gets underway in a major way, because we're talking about Israel itself, which is well-armed, but also all the proxies that the Iranians have. So you've got Iran itself with a population of 85 million. You've also got Hezbollah in Lebanon. You've got also the vulnerability of American forces that are deployed in Iraq and Syria. So they're almost becoming hostages to counteraction by Iranian proxies in those two countries. So we could actually see this sort of ramping up. Now, President Biden has said that he will not be supporting an Israeli offensive in Iran. He's trying to cool it down. His great fear is that he will end up with a war in the Middle East, which will then sink his chances of re-election in November.
Yeah, it's definitely a very, very carefully and precariously balanced situation at the moment. Could tip either way. We will keep you close so we can call you for the latest update, because there's no doubt many twists and turns still to come. Foreign Affairs expert Dr. Keith Suter, thanks for joining us and sharing these insights on the Nightly Five.
Thank you.
Around 4 a.m. yesterday, Torres Strait police responded to reports of a missing teenager on Saibai Island in the Torres Strait. It is understood two teenagers tried to swim ashore after their dinghy they were in had broken down. They were about 500 metres from shore. The younger boy, who was 13, made it back to the shore and a search was commenced for the older boy.
A teenager has been killed by a crocodile in far north Queensland, police have confirmed. Police launched a search and rescue operation on Thursday morning following the disappearance of a 16-year-old boy at Saibai Island in the Torres Strait. The teenager and a 13-year-old boy had reportedly tried to swim to shore from a broken-down dinghy when the attack occurred. When emergency services responded to calls at about 4 a.m. on Thursday, the 13-year-old boy had made it to shore and the 16-year-old was believed missing. In a tragic update on Thursday afternoon, police located a boy on the island, and today they confirmed it was the missing teen. A spokesperson for Queensland's Department of Environment, Science and Innovation said wildlife officers will now survey the waters off Saibai Island in order to attempt to locate the crocodile involved. The crocodile suspected to be involved in the attack is estimated to be about 3.5 metres in length.
Unlike other supermarkets, Aldi only stocks the best, so you save time and money. That's good different.
Discount supermarket Aldi has taken aim at Queensland's restrictive liquor retail laws, which block it selling alcohol in its supermarkets in the Sunshine State. The Queensland Parliament is holding an inquiry into supermarket prices in that state, with similar terms of reference to the Senate inquiry that wrapped this week ahead of a final report next month. The SA Parliament is also holding an inquiry on the same issue. Hearings in Queensland begin on Monday in the regional city of Bundaberg and are expected to run into the middle of next month ahead of a final report on May 31. Queensland law requires liquor to be sold from a hotel or a detached bottle shop nearby, and owners must have a commercial liquor licence. It also bans drive-through bottle shops and shops larger than 150 square metres and requires the detached bottle shop to be no more than 10 kilometres from the main licensed premises. Aldi, which sells alcohol at its supermarkets in New South Wales, Victoria, the ACT and WA, but not Queensland or SA, says these laws have contributed to higher alcohol prices for consumers. Aldi said the unique regulatory landscape in Queensland grants a select few supermarket chains, Reed, Woolworths and Coles, a significant dominance in liquor sales.
I was supposed to be sent away, but they forgot to come and get me. I was a functioning alcoholic till nobody noticed my aesthetic.
Stop the presses. Taylor Swift's new album, The Tortured Poets Department, has dropped, and you better believe we're going to unpack it right now. Here to give us a vibe check is noted Swiftie and Channel 7 Sunrise correspondent Matt Tinney. Matty, on first listen, was Tortured Poets Department everything you'd hoped for?
Mate, I absolutely love this album, and I've seen some of the reviews coming out saying Taylor Swift needs a break, there's nothing new here. But, you know, I've really enjoyed listening to it. What I want to do is listen to it again with, like, red wine, chocolate, maybe some tissues, and you know, really get into the lyrics and what she's saying, because a lot of it does feel very autobiographical. I think we were thinking it was going to be about Joe Alwyn, the person who she had the relationship with for 6 years there. But it seems like it's about Maddie Healy, who's from the band 1975. And the reason being, she put out a tweet when she released the album, and I'll read from it. She says, "The Tortured Poets Department," this is the name of the album, "an anthology of new works that reflect events, opinions and sentiments from a fleeting and fatalistic moment in time," not 6 years, obviously, there, "one that was both sensational and sorrowful in equal measure. This period of the author's life is now over. The chapter closed and boarded up. There's nothing to avenge, no scores to settle once wounds have healed. And upon further reflection, a good number of them turned out to be self-inflicted. This writer is of the firm belief that our tears become holy in the form of ink on a page. Once we have spoken our saddest story, we can be free of it." And she ends it with, "and then all that's left behind is the tortured poetry."
Yeah, well, listen, so she said there's no revenge to be had, and she's written some of these album. Songs. So she's written some of these songs clearly about Matty Healy, and one of those songs is called The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived.
Yes.
And another one is My Boy Only Breaks His Favourite Toys, which I reckon is about Healy as well. Let's do a bit of a deep dive into the album now, because we've both had a chance to listen to it. And it kicks off with a song called Fortnite, which we heard at the top of this segment. It features a collaboration with Post Malone. A posty Swifty collab wasn't something I had on my bingo card for 2024. To me, it's giving Lana Del Rey vibes.
I agree. I'm 100% on board with you on that. I think it's a great song to set up the album. It gets you into the vibe of where she wants to put you, but I wouldn't say it's a banger.
No.
But it does set it up.
Yeah, and it's the sort of album that I wouldn't say has any real obvious bangers like some of her earlier albums.
Well, I disagree with
you
on that.
Do you really? What have you got for me? What do you reckon?
I think Who's Afraid of Little Old Me is the banger of this album, and I think that will come out as a single. I also like I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, which sounds a little bit like Mastermind. And the other one that I really like is Florida, which is the one with Florence Welch.
I
think that's really powerful. And I actually like the title track, The Tortured Poets Department. It's not the same as All Too Well, but it's got so many little details in it. You know, instead of the scarf from All Too Well, it's got the typewriter. And I really want to do a deep dive on that one. I need to go back over the lyrics of that one.
Talking about the lyrics, it does feel, as you said, that this album is extremely personal. The lyrics at sometimes are incredibly dense. And if there's a criticism for me, it's maybe that sometimes those lyrics feel a little bit forced. But you talk about the Tortured Poets Department, the song. It's a brutal takedown of an ex. And also, it's the first example, really, on this album that Tay-Tay is going to drop some F-bombs. There are a number of songs on this album that have the, you know, E for explicit language. A line from Tortured Poets, the song, is, "Who's going to hold you like me? No effin' body," except she doesn't say effin'.
No. And do you know what? It's a bit of a risk for an artist who has so many fans who are, you know, in primary school.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, the Taylor Swift of now is like a woman in her mid-30s.
Yeah.
You know, she's not early 20s. So she's had a bit of life. She's had things happen to her and she wants to talk about it. This album to me feels very much like it's her therapy. It's almost like her therapist said, go away, write a journal. And she's turned those journal writings into songs rather than perhaps starting with a catchy chorus and then building a song around that.
Yeah, I agree. And a song like So Long London, which does look like that is one of the breakup songs about Jo Alwyn. That's giving me Robin vibes, you know, the sort of indie dance, sort of a bit of a low-key banger, which I think is a pretty interesting song as well.
I liked that one.
Yeah, I like that one too. Yeah. Like, I think it looks like the critics have enjoyed this album as well so far. The Guardian gave it 4 stars, Rolling Stone gave it 5 stars, The Independent gave it 5 stars, NME could only imagine manage 3 stars, still, generally speaking, from the big media outlets, some pretty glowing reviews. So I'm going to put you on the spot, Matty. You haven't had a chance to really digest it. How many stars are you going to give it?
Look, I reckon it's somewhere around the 4.5.
Oh.
Somewhere around 4.5, I think. But, you know, that's one listen.
Yeah.
You know, once I get the chance to listen to it over and over and over all weekend and bore my kids with it, you know, skipping past the tracks with the F-bombs.
Which is half the tracks.
I might give it a little bit more, but for me, like, I love her album 1989. I love that album. So many songs on that album I absolutely love. This one, I'm sure some of the songs that aren't, you know, jumping out at me yet will eventually. But it's got enough there to work with, enough to work with. I think it will be interesting because the Eras Tour kicks off again in Europe, whether she includes parts of Tortured Poets Department in that tour, you know, refreshes it. And, you know, there are definitely a few upbeat tracks that in my mind would work for that tour at the end.
Yeah, exactly. And for everybody, you know, you might have to wait a couple of days till all the Easter eggs have been discovered and revealed. But that's all part of the fun of Taylor Swift, Channel 7 Sunrise correspondent and our resident Swiftie, Matt Tinney. Thanks for joining us on the Nightly Five.
Mate, thanks for having me.
Legendary Sea Eagles coach Des Hasler is set to battle with his former club in court, taking Manly to task for his dramatic sacking at the end of last season.
That was the news last year that former Manly coach Des Hasler and club legend was suing his old club for unfair dismissal. Well, that's one of the highlights of the coming round of the NRL because Desi is going up against his old club. Here to tell us more is sports editor at The Nightly, Ben McClellan. Now, you are a Manly boy through and through.
Wearing a Manly shirt right now.
Wearing a Manly shirt right now.
The camera's not on.
Are you conflicted to see the club legend Desi and also the man who's dragging them into court?
Yes.
Going up against them.
Des is a club legend. I mean that term's thrown around pretty freely, but Des Hasler definitely fits the bill for that. I mean, he coached Manly to two premierships. He was a loyal servant as a player. Unfortunately. He's fell out with the club twice because he's left and come back twice. Now he's left. I don't think he's coming back again. So, there's been this pretty ugly lawsuit. I mean, just very quickly, it all stems back to 2022. There's controversy over Manly and a Pride jersey. Some of the faith-based players were uncomfortable wearing the Pride jersey. It caused quite a kerfuffle at the club. Essentially, after that that happened, the Manly went completely
terrible, scuppered their season.
Just basically sunk them. Des was very unhappy, had a falling out with the bosses. There was talks of sort of coach successions involving Anthony Seibold. In the end, they just punted Des. Des was unhappy about it. He's now fighting them for more than $1 million. They've offered him nearly $600,000, but he doesn't want to take that, which is obviously a mouth-watering sort of premise for this match. The Titans are 0-5. They feature Kieran Foran, a former Manly great player as well, who's very much at the end of his career. The Titans can't buy a win to save themselves. Manly are in pretty good form, having recently come off a massive win over the Panthers. So it's not great for the Titans. I think Desi's probably going to be 0-6 after this weekend.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Talking about the Panthers,
yes.
There's a great piece on The Nightly today that's asked the question, is Penrith about to have its own Ray Price moment?
Yes. So just to explain that, so the Parramatta Eels were, a dynasty club for what was then the New South Wales RW, the precursor to the NRL in the 1980s. They won four premierships. A key part of that was Ray Price. After he retired after the 1986 grand final, Parramatta fell off a cliff and didn't feature for a long time in a grand final. So we've got a piece today looking at the Panthers have just let James Fisher-Harris go to the Warriors. He's arguably the best prop in the world. He's going for family reasons, and he's walking out of his contract 2 years early. And so this piece poses the question, could what happened to Parramatta after one of their great forwards left be the same to the Panthers because of his great influence, not only in terms of what he does on the field, James Fisher-Harris, but also what he does off the field, his work ethic, training, all of those things. Now, obviously, the Panthers are a factory of great players, but you never know. Yeah, like they're chasing their fourth premiership. They've got Luai's going to the Tigers. They're under enormous pressure to retain some of their players. So, yeah, you never know. This could be the tipping point for them.
Yeah, well, they've got him for this year, so maybe he'll ride off into the sunset with one more premiership. We'll wait and see. All right, let's talk AFL.
Yes.
There's been a lot of water flow under the bridge and sort of, I'm truly established here. And as much as it might seem unemotional, it's just like it has to be faceless. It doesn't matter whether it's Hawthorn or Geelong or whatever the opponent is. It's just like we've got 23 guys that have got to go out and compete.
It was big news when former Hawthorn coach Alistair Clarkson signed with North Melbourne. And now Clarko, who's a bit of a controversial figure, polarising figure, is coming up against his old club Hawthorn this weekend. Look, you can't exactly call it a blockbuster because neither team is any good.
No. It's the battle of the cellar dwellers. So there will be a bit of fascination with the game. I mean, without being too unkind, I mean, the teams are so bad that it feels like it's going to be a good match. So the Kangaroos haven't got a win. Neither have the Hawks. The Hawks are coached by Sam Mitchell, who served under Clarkson at Hawthorn. There was sort of, again, yet another great, I don't know why clubs always do this, these sort of coaching succession scenarios which went south and Clarkson went early, essentially. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Yeah, both sides are desperate for a win. And unless something really, really strange happens, one of them will win.
Yeah, well, exactly. Can you imagine a draw? That would be shocking. So it's going to be very interesting to see. I think it's maybe a stretch to say it'll be a good game. I think it might be an even game.
Okay, well, that's another way of putting it.
That's another way of putting it. But there is actually some good footy on the horizon. Some great matches. And look, let's start with the Blues versus the Giants.
Yeah, so Giants are red hot. They're a scoring machine at the moment. Jesse Hogan's got a bag of goals. The Blues are down on some key defenders. They don't have Adam Saad. They're also missing Mitch McGovern. It's Michael Voss, their coach, has come out today saying the Blues defenders are really going to have to be on their toes. Obviously, Toby Green for the Giants is considered the best player in the game. So it should be a fascinating match. We've also got Collingwood hosting Port Adelaide. Now, Port Adelaide are another one of the hot teams. They have arguably the best midfield in the competition going around. They're missing Charlie Dixon. Obviously, as most of our listeners would know, we're also missing Finlayson because of Jeremy Finlayson because of the gay slur ban. The Pies, Pendlebury's in the team. There was some concerns he might not play after injury in his last game. Sidebottom, they're pretty full strength. Nick Dacos.
Well, he says they're cherry ripe.
Yes. So we'll see. So the Pies at home, MCG, are very much in their favour. If Port Adelaide can beat Collingwood at the MCG, it'll be a massive statement to the competition that they are one of the top teams to beat to take out the flag.
Yeah, yeah. And the flip side is if the Pies win, I guess we'd have to say they're back. They're back at least in the mix for the finals this year after a pretty slow start. And then let's talk about that other football, the round ball game.
Yes.
As a full time, it is 1-0 to Indonesia. A terrific result for them. They doggedly held on against the misfiring Australia side.
Bad news for the Oli Roos overnight. They dropped a crucial qualifier to Indonesia.
Yeah, it's a slightly complicated system with the Olympics for soccer. So they're playing in the Asian Cup. They're playing a group match. They lost to Indonesia 1-0. The Oli Roos missed a penalty. And so for them to qualify in Paris, they needed to finish well in this competition, and now it looks like they may not even get out of the group stage of the Asian Cup. So there's some pretty dire consequences for them and booking their place in Paris. It'd be obviously devastating for Australian football if the Oli Roos didn't qualify for the Olympics. And this comes as the A-League has scrapped its end-of-year awards, which has been met with some controversy. So they hand out a couple of gongs for sort of the best and fairest each year, the Doolan Award and the Warren Award, named after Johnny Warren, the great Australian soccer player. Warren's family's come out today saying they're quite upset that the awards, the end-of-season awards ceremony, has now been truncated into a ceremony that is going to take place during the grand final in half time.
It makes no sense.
Yes, which raises the question, you would think one of the best players in the competition may be in one of the grand final teams. So what does that mean for them? Do they duck out of the sheds after the coach has given them a spray to get their award? So the A-League's got a new hierarchy. They're looking at cutting costs. And it just really isn't a good look because you want to sort of publicly celebrate your competition. As we know, Brownlow is the Knight of Knights in the AFL. Dally M's a massive knight in the NRL. So for the A-League to say, look, we've got to tighten the purse strings, so we're not going to have an awards ceremony at all, probably wasn't that well thought out, of course, completely understanding the financial reasons for it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank goodness for the Matildas. That's all I'll say. And that, folks, is today's show. Thanks, Ben McClellan, sports editor of The Nightly, for joining us in the studio on Friday. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Join me again on Monday for The Nightly Five.
The Nightly Five podcast is brought to you by Seven West Media. For all these stories and more, head to thenightly.com.au. Helping you get in front of tomorrow.